Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hi.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We are brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it is an end of the month episode, which means that we are going to deviate from the usual and talk about something a little different. Normally, when we do an episode, we'll pick one board game. And we'll talk about how to play it. We'll talk about the strategies involved in the game. We'll talk about how it was designed. But because it is an end of the month episode, instead we have decided to talk about a video game.
Again.
Again. We did it last month and we're doing it again this month. And just like last month, our video game has a board game twist to it. So it's not too far from the usual.
Yeah.
It's a game that we've been playing a lot lately and we're pretty into it.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely taken both us and also a pretty sizable portion of the competitive gaming community, especially on like twitch.tv.
Mm-hmm. Especially like Hearthstone streamers in particular.
We are talking about Dota 2 Auto Chess. It was created by a team called Drodo Studios. Their usernames are Cutie, Pucky, Nat, Mouse, and Toto. And these are all found as credits on the Steam Workshop page on Dota 2. The Steam Workshop being the sort of Steam like user-generated content system, and Dota 2 being the game that it is a custom game mode for.
Right. So, yes, Dota 2 is a game in and of itself. It's a lot like League of Legends or Smite or other MOBAs. It has a lot of unique fantasy characters that face off in an arena against one another in teams of five. But this is a mod of that game that uses its characters in a very interesting, unique way.
And its core systems in a way as well.
Yes. So we're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about the strategies involved, and we're going to talk about the design that goes into it, because there's a lot of very cool things that happen in this game.
Yeah.
That don't often happen in a lot of games.
Oh, yeah. It's super fresh.
Yes. To give a short description of what I'm going to just refer to as Auto Chess is from here on out. So short description of Auto Chess. In Dota Auto Chess, you and seven other players are tasked with acquiring and assembling units on a chessboard to be pitted against your opponent's units over a number of rounds until one player is left standing. A round consists of two phases: a preparation phase in which you acquire units with gold from a random selection drawn from a pool and assemble them on your board, and a combat phase where a random opponent's units are pitted against yours until one army is left standing. If your units win, you receive a gold bonus. If your units lose, the opponent's units remaining on the board deal damage to your life total. When a player is reduced to zero life, they are eliminated, and of course, the last player standing wins. So that is the gist of Dota Auto Chess. You are acquiring units, assembling them on a board, they're fighting your opponent's units. If you lose, you take damage, and if you take too much, you're knocked out.
Yes.
But there's a lot more to it.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the gameplay, and through it we're going to talk about the strategies involved in this game.
Yeah, so I think first we should talk about what all a hero entails, or a chess, as this game calls them.
Yes, or a unit, as I referred to them in the short description.
Right.
Yes, a chess. So there are these chess units, and you get them from a pool that all players share. You are dealt five of them semi-randomly at the beginning of your turn, and you spend your gold to acquire them. And when you acquire them, they first go to a reserves row where you can hold up to eight pieces. And then from the reserves row, you place them on your half of a chessboard. And a chessboard is an 8x8 grid. So you place yours in an 8x4 grid.
Yeah.
So a chess piece in this game, or chess in this game, is a unit that has a number of stats unique to it. It has an attack stat, it has an armor stat, it has a health stat, and then it also has two or three, in this game I believe they're called species and classes, kind of like races and classes in a role-playing game. The species include humans, elves, orcs, goblins, dwarves, naga,
trolls,
dragons, trolls, demons, ogres. I think that's most of them. Undead.
Yeah.
And then the classes can include warriors, hunters, assassins, mechs, demon hunters,
warlocks,
shamans, mages, warlocks,
knights.
I think that's all of those. So a unit has two or three of those, typically two. And then every unit has a special ability. There's a handful of units. Actually, I don't know how many of each or how many units there are in total.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not sure, honestly.
I'm going to look that up real quick. There are 55 units in the game.
Yeah, and each unit is a unique hero with the aforementioned race and class, and also an ability. Oftentimes, this is referred to an ultimate ability. These are the other thing that makes each character unique, because each character has a mana bar, which fills up as they deal damage and take damage, and like when they're in the center of a fight. When it reaches the full amount, the full 100%, then if they have an activated ability here, they will use that ability. Most people have activated abilities. Some of them have passive bonuses that stack over time. But the meat and potatoes of the game revolves around these activated ultimate abilities. And these all have a cooldown after they're used before they can be used again. And they all pretty much do different effects that range from dealing a lot of damage to moving you or another chess around, like that chess or another one, or stunning multiple enemies at once, or gaining or losing life, just various special moves that impact the battle.
Sure. So at the start of the game, you have control over a unique character that just kind of represents you. I'm just going to call it your character from now on.
Yeah.
And this character has a level, and you start at level 1, and it goes up to level 10. And the level determines how many units you can have on your chessboard at the start of the combat round, and how many units of yours will be fighting in that combat round.
Right.
So at the start of the game, you can only field one unit, and then as you go, you can field more and more, and the excess units go in your reserves. And when you start to field more units, that's when you start to unlock synergies. And synergies are a very key component into the strategy of the game. So to explain synergies, we mentioned that every unit has a species and a class. And when you have multiple units of different kinds, but that share these species and classes, then you start to unlock passive bonuses to your units. And it depends on the species and class and what those bonuses are and how many unique units of each kind you need in order to unlock those bonuses. Just to give a couple examples, if you have three warrior units, then all of your warriors receive a buff to their armor. If you have two orc units, I believe you will also receive a buff to your armor, to your orc units. If you have three goblin units, then they will receive a buff to their health regeneration. If you have two mech units, then they will receive a buff to their health regeneration. And then elves get evasion, and assassins get crit bonus, critical hit bonus. So all these different species and classes have these bonuses, and when you start to combine your units together in these different ways, then you start to unlock these bonuses that give you an edge over your opponents.
Right.
Now, to level up your character, because you start at level 1, at the end of every round, you gain 1 experience, and then you can also spend 5 gold to gain 4 experience. And depending on what level you're trying to reach, it will take a multiple of 4 experience to reach that point. So sometimes you have to spend 10 gold to level up. Sometimes you have to spend 20 gold to level up. It depends on how much experience you have at that point and how much you need. And it gets more and more expensive as the game progresses. And we mentioned at the beginning that you spend gold to acquire units. So just to go a little further into that, Every unit in the game has a level ascribed to it when it is in the pool that ranges from 1 to 5. And at the start of the game, you only have access to the level 1 units. As you level up your own character, you start to gain access. You start to be dealt higher level units more often. And a unit's level determines how much money it costs to acquire it. A level 1 costs 1 gold, a level 2 costs 2 gold, etc. So you are spending gold to acquire units and level yourself up. Matthew, why don't you talk about how you get more gold?
Right. So at the end of every round, at the start of the next round, basically, you gain 5 gold automatically.
Now that's after the first 3 rounds.
Right.
Yeah. The first 3 rounds, you acquire 1 gold, then 2 gold, then 4 gold.
Right.
But then from the 4th round and then until the end of the game, you're receiving 5 gold at the beginning of every round.
Right. Then if you won the previous round against an opponent, you gain 1 gold as a win bonus.
Mm-hmm.
If you win multiple times in a row, eventually you'll get winning streak bonuses, which I believe start at 1 extra gold and continue on.
Right. I believe it's at 5 wins, it is 1 gold, which goes up to 3 gold. It's either 2 gold at 8 wins and then 3 at 10. I think that's it.
Yeah. And then there are also losing streak bonuses that give you gold if you lose enough. Streak. Yeah.
Exactly. If you lose 5 games in a row, then you will receive a bonus gold. If you lose 8 games in a row, that increases to 2.
Right.
Yes. And then at 10 losses in a row, that increases to 3.
Now, most importantly, probably to the strategy, you also gain interest on your gold. At the start of a round, if you have a multiple of 10 or, you know, like over 10, then you will gain 10% of your gold, as interest. Meaning, if you have
10 gold that you have, you gain 1 gold.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it. So if you have 10 gold, you gain 1, 20, you gain 2. All the way up to 50, you'll gain 5. Anything higher, and you'll gain 5 gold as interest.
Yes. So as you're spending money to level up your character and to purchase new units, you are gaining money from either winning or losing games, and you are also possibly gaining interest if you can save your money.
Yeah.
One
last thing you can spend money on. You can spend 2 gold to re-roll the chesses you have in your pool available to you. So right. You get dealt 5 new. Yeah.
Yes. So there's one more important thing that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
And that is that when you acquire 3 of the same kind of unit, then they will combine into a tier 2 version of that unit. So we mentioned that you get these synergies from acquiring a diverse pool of units. But you also are rewarded for acquiring multiple of the same kind of unit by combining them into a tier 2 unit. And essentially, a tier 2 unit has twice the stats of a tier 1 unit.
Yeah, and I believe they gain mana quicker as well.
Well, the thing is, the rate that you gain mana is based on the damage you take and the damage you deal.
Right,
because they have higher attack stats, then they are gaining mana quicker.
So technically, yes, but also yes.
Yeah. So a tier 2 unit has double the stats of a tier 1 unit. Now, you'll notice that you combine 3 units to make a tier 2 unit. So you're essentially getting 3 units worth of stats to get 1 unit or 2 units worth of stats. But because it only takes up a single unit slot and the space on the board that you have access to based on your level is very limited, then it's very much worth it. And like you said, they also deal more damage. So they eliminate opponents' pieces faster and they gain their ultimate ability quicker, which can turn the tide of a game very quickly. It can make a big difference in a game.
It should be noted, 3 tier 2s can also combine into a tier 3,
mm-hmm.
which is the highest then that it can go. But this is a lot harder to pull off.
It is, but it is possible, and it's easier with lower tier units. Now, we mentioned that every player in the game is acquiring units from the same pool. There is a large pool of all these units that the game is randomly drawing from and giving you 5 at a time to make your lineup that you can purchase from. but everyone's drawing from the same pool. So that means if multiple players are trying to acquire the same types of units and make tier two units of the same types of units, then it'll be harder because the selection is more limited.
Right.
Now, I have looked up the numbers, and it's actually not quite as hard as it looks. I think in this game, when it comes to the drafting, it is equal parts, maybe even it less so influenced by what your opponents are doing and more so by what the game is dealing you.
Yeah.
What your opponents do plays a part, but not as large a part as other drafting games. So just to give some counts of all the level one units, there are 45 of each unit in the pool, which means that everybody in the game, since it is an eight player game, can create a tier two unit of any single level one unit. And then everyone except one player, I believe, can make a second tier two unit of that one single unit type in the level one units.
Right.
So there's a lot to go around for level one. It gets more limited as you go. Of the level two units, there are 30 each. There's 25 of each level three unit, 15 of each level four unit, and there's only 10 of each level five unit, which means that when you get to level five, only one player has the possibility of getting a tier three unit. And if two other players get a single unit of any given level five unit, then it's impossible for anybody to get a tier three unit.
Right.
And even then it's very high, a very low probability that you will be dealt nine of a level five unit, because I mean, once you get to those tier level five units, once you're a high enough level that those are starting to get dealt to you by the computer, you know, those are still being mixed in with all the level four, level three, level two, and level one units that are still remaining.
Right.
And then just so you know, if you do have the ability to sell a unit, and when you sell a unit, you get money equal to its level. So you can sell a unit for just as much money as you purchased it for. There's no punishment there. When a unit is sold, it gets put back into the pool for other players or yourself to acquire again later. And when a player is eliminated from the game, then all of their units get put back into the pool. So even if another player has been acquiring all the same units that you're going for, if they get eliminated, then you have a chance to get those units again.
Right. One more important mechanic that we didn't touch on is that the first three rounds and then round 10 and every five rounds after, so 1, 2, 3, 10, 15, so on, is a creep round in which you are not pitted against another player. You are pit against an AI-controlled monster.
Well, technically, all of the units are AI-controlled. But yeah, the AI controls these rounds they summon these monsters that aren't any kind of unit in the game. They're just these monsters.
Right. And if you... These are, well, the order that they appear and the positions they appear in are always the same every time you play the game. And if you beat one or kill one, you have a chance of getting an item. And items, you can put up to six on a given chess piece. And they usually just give small bonuses like attack damage or armor.
Mm-hmm.
But certain items can combine into better items. And when a chess unit has all the ingredients of a single higher tier item, those items will combine to create the better one.
Mm-hmm. Combining items in this game is a kind of a rare occurrence, because whether or not an item drops is random.
And then which item it is random.
Yeah. So there's sometimes where you'll just get multiples of the same item, and those don't ever combine unless it's Mjolnir, which is I think a pretty rare item to grab, and even then you just need a lot of different kinds of items to combine to make the higher tier items. It's pretty rare.
Usually I've found that, like, if a game gets to round, or if I survive to round 30, I'm able to have one combined item.
Yeah, and that's also because a lot of the items that combine into stronger items won't be dropped by the creeps in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, like round 25 is where they start to drop.
Yeah, certain items are more likely to be dropped in later rounds, and those items are usually key in upgrading or combining your items into upgraded items.
Yes.
So getting items is good, but it's random, and knowing the combinations is good, but it doesn't come up very often. So, all right, let's talk strategy in this game. So at the start of the game, you're given 5 level 1 units to pick from, and you only have $1 or 1 gold, so you only get to pick 1 unit. And I think the community as a whole has agreed that there are 2 particular units that are better to pick than any other unit from this lineup.
Ooh, I think I know what they are.
Okay.
Let me guess.
What do you think they are?
Bounty Hunter and yep. Axe.
Correct. These are the 2 best. And I think Bounty Hunter is slightly favored just because it actually deals good damage. But yeah, so Bounty Hunter is a Goblin Assassin. The Assassin part is less important than the Goblin part. Goblin is a very good early game unit or early game species to get the synergy for because there's so many of them that cost a small amount of gold. Most of them cost 1 gold. And then there's a single goblin that costs 2 gold. So it's very easy to get the 3 goblin synergy together. And that synergy is health regeneration, which is also a very powerful early game ability because units at the beginning of the game don't deal a lot of damage.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also worth mentioning that 3 of the 4 goblins early in the game are also mechs.
Yes.
Bounty Hunter is the only one that's not.
Right. And you only need 2 mechs to get that synergy. Unfortunately, the other 2 level 1 goblins are both mechs, but they're just not as strong as Bounty Hunter. Bounty Hunter just deals a lot of damage, definitely, which is pretty good in the early game. Axe is the other chess that is good at the very beginning of the game because it is an orc warrior, and both of those species that species and class is also very good. Axe doesn't deal a lot of damage, but it has a lot of health, and it has an ultimate ability that taunts the enemy chess pieces around it, which means that it forces them to attack him, which is good for, I mean, it's good because it draws the fire away from other critical pieces that you need to get their ults off and deal a lot of damage.
Yeah.
It gives them armor. And again, orc and warrior are very good because they can be met very quickly. There's a lot of warriors that cost a low amount of gold. There's a lot of orcs that cost a relatively low amount of gold. And they both give armor bonuses, which is very strong.
Yeah.
Because units don't deal a lot of damage. So when you're mitigating a very small amount of damage into nothingness, your units stick around for a long time and they eventually defeat your opponents. So if you see either of those 2 pieces, it's generally good to pick those up and then try to meet those synergies over the next few rounds by acquiring other goblins or orcs or warriors. If you don't get those 2, you're not out of luck because the rest of the tier 1 units are generally still decent to pick up. They all have synergies that you can eventually acquire, and those synergies are usually very useful. They're just not as easy to meet those synergies so early, unlike the goblin and the orc. And they're not quite as useful at the beginning of the game as goblin, orc, and warrior synergies.
Well, I mean, in that way, I would say Clockwork is also fine because he's the better of the goblin mechs at level 1.
Yes. He's slightly better than Tinker at level 1. Which is the 3rd goblin at level 1. I mean, if it's between Bounty Hunter and Clockwork, I'd still take the Bounty Hunter.
Right.
But if you don't have anything, but you do see a Clockwork or a Tinker, you know, you can still start on that path.
Yeah.
So from there, you go into round 2, where you start to access tier 2 units because you will automatically hit level 2. And you might see some of those in your second pool. Generally from your second pool, if you can't acquire more pieces that synergize with the one that you bought in the first round, then you can try and get Queen of Pain, which is a demon. And demons have a special ability where if they're the only demon you control, and this is the only species that has a anti-combo synergy, If you only have one demon, then it gets 50% more damage, I believe. Queen of Pain is a very early demon that costs two. She has an AoE ability, which we'll talk about over time. AoE stands for Area of Effect, and those are very strong. Otherwise, there's Juggernaut, there's Timber, there's Beastmaster. Those are all Orc and Goblin. Timbersaw, I think it's called.
Yeah, Timbersaw.
Timbersaw is a goblin mech. It's very strong. It's also very tanky and has a good AoE ability. Juggernaut and Axe both have AoE abilities. They're strong orcs. Juggernaut's a warrior as well, so it meets that synergy. These are all good units to combine with your early units. In general, any tier 2 unit is going to be pretty useful, I think.
Yeah.
So if it comes to round 2 and you don't have any synergies, just acquiring a single tier 2 unit, throwing it out there with your tier 1 unit is going to be better than nothing.
Yeah, and then so from that point on, you start to get into sort of the early game, mid game transition phase.
Right. So early game is all about deciding what that initial synergy is going to be. So it's saying like, okay, I'm going to try and get try and get the goblin synergy online. I'm going to try to get the warrior synergy online, try to get the orc synergy online. Or you might try to get like the troll synergy, which you can sometimes get in the early game, or a knight synergy, which knights are more expensive units, but you only need two of them and you can start getting them at level 2. So that's not difficult. So the early game is trying to get that initial synergy online and then complement it with another synergy that probably has a little bit of overlap with it. And then try and get some of your units to tier 2.
Right.
That's just in order to have a competitive army. And right, this will go, I think this period will last up to round 15.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I want to mention that all the while you want to try to save money when you can.
Yes.
Because meeting your higher interest brackets can really give you an edge as well as the game progresses.
Right. Yeah. There's something to be said. If you're nowhere near getting one of those interest levels, then it's totally fine just to buy up random units in this game. Because you can sell a unit back for just as much as you spent to acquire it. So there's really no penalty to it. Having a unit just means that you're that much closer to getting a tier 2 of that unit. And in some cases, just having a tier 2 unit is better than having certain synergies at the beginning of the game, because tier 2 units are just so efficient.
Yeah.
So just having a unit around that has the chance to be upgraded into a tier 2 unit on a good draw isn't a bad thing. But you want to sell your units when you are very close to reaching one of those next brackets for acquiring interest. Because, I mean, we like to talk about in these games about like getting value or tempo or whatever over your opponents. And the major way that you do this in this game is by reaching those interest levels.
Yeah.
And acquiring interest over time. Because the win streak bonus at the beginning of the game isn't all that much. And neither is the losing streak bonus. So just getting one gold of interest is just as if you had a 5 win streak. You know, 5 win streak isn't easy to get.
Right.
So just having 10 gold, that's a very achievable thing that you can do to start to get an edge over your opponents.
Right. Or another way to look at it is if buying experience costs 5 gold, then getting to the 5 gold worth of interest lets you buy experience every turn, which doubles your experience rate almost, or I guess quintuples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While still leaving you enough money to get all the units that you want.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So early game goes up to level or round 15, I should say. Round 15. Which, by the way, round 15 is wolves as the creep that you have to fight rather than the opponent. And when you're prepping for round 15, always put your frontline units, so the units with the most health and armor, at the back of the chessboard.
Wolves are assassins.
Yeah, they jump all the way to the back of your chest.
We should mention assassins automatically jump to the back of the opponent's row.
Unless they're fighting something from the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
So,
well, they will try to jump to the other side of the board and flank your opponent's pieces.
Unless, I mean, unless they can hit something where they stand at the start of a round.
That's
because some assassin units, like the Queen of Pain assassin unit, has an attack range of 2. So if you put her on the second row and there's a unit in front of her and then there's a unit, an enemy unit in front of that, she will start the fight just attacking that enemy unit.
Yeah.
She won't leap. And by the way, for the Queen of Pain, that's actually a good thing, even though she's an assassin, because she has an AoE ability and most of the opponent's units are going to be bunched up on the front line.
Yeah.
In a game. All right. So mid game goes between levels 15 and 25. And at this point, what you're trying to do is get more synergies. So you want to unlock like 2 more synergies in this part of the game, or you want to start unlocking more higher level synergies that occur in more expensive units. You're also starting to plan your end game, which doesn't mean acquiring your end game pieces, but that's just saying like, if you've committed to goblins, this is the point where you'd say, I'm sticking to goblins through the end game. Or if you're not really getting that many goblins, but you are getting a lot of good like knights and undead and maybe some other unit like elves, then you would say like, you know what, I had goblins for the early game, but I'm not going to get a lot more goblins from here on out. They're going to start to sort of die off in effectiveness. So the mid game is where you start to sell those pieces away and start to buy into new synergies.
Right.
So that goes up to level 25. And from then on, it's the end game. And that's just reaching level 10 on your character's level. So that's the max level and fielding all of your units. And then organizing your final end game composition. And then spending all of your money, because you no longer have to spend money to level up, spending all of your money on re-rolling and acquiring pieces so that you can reach tier 3 units or tier 2 units of high level, hard to get units.
Yes.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about some early game synergies that are very good to focus on. Let's talk a little bit about end game compositions and what you should be looking for if you want to be effective in the end game.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, if you have like a good lineup of goblins and you get all of them to tier 2, like you have all 4 goblins from the beginning, they all get to tier 2, then that's a perfectly reasonable team core to take with you into the end game.
Right.
And, you know, from that core, there's assassin synergies with the bounty hunter, which is the best goblin to buy level 1. It's just a 4 unit core. So eventually you can just have other synergies even that don't even have any overlap that work along with it.
Yeah. So I know one big point of late game sort of planning is that a lot of the higher level units' ults are super important, especially mm-hmm. ones that can like stun or impair a lot of units at once.
Right. This is called crowd control.
Yeah.
In these types of games.
Or CC and, for short.
CC for short. Yeah, I think there's generally 2 types of very strong ults towards the end game, and those are AoE and crowd control. And crowd control is also typically AoE.
Yeah.
And these ults are good to, sometimes these ults are good enough that in the mid game you can just throw them in with whatever random synergy you've got. There's a unit called Shadow Fiend that has a very powerful AoE ability. Similarly, there's a unit called Razor, which also has a very powerful AoE ability. Both of those can just kind of be sprinkled in with the team. They don't really have to match any synergies, and they probably won't, because Shadow Fiend's a demon warlock. There's not a lot of warlocks early game, and demon, of course, you only want one of. Razor is an elemental wizard, and elemental synergies aren't very good in the game in general, and wizards, you don't usually unlock those until the late game.
Well, and the early game mages aren't good
Yeah, the early game mages aren't very good. So you just kind of throw those into whatever team, and just having that AoE burst is a very good thing in a lot of cases. A third kind of ult that is decent in the late game but very powerful in the mid game is a summoning ult,
right,
which will some units, if they get enough mana, they'll summon extra units.
Right, there's a few really notable ones, like Lycan, who summons two wolves. I know one that actually does scale well into the late game is Lone Druid, who summons a bear, and the bear can stun people.
Right. I think Lycan and Lone Druid are two of the strongest units to pick up in the mid game. They are level 3 and 4, respectively, Lycan and Lone Druid. They both are, I think they have a little bit of overlap. One of them is a human druid, and the other is a beast warrior. Beast warrior has some very good synergies with early game units.
I think Lycan's a human beast warrior. He's one of the ones with 3.
Oh, right. He is a beast. Beast has some good... No, Lycan is a druid. Lycan is a human beast warrior. Yes.
Yeah.
Very good synergies and overlaps with him. Lone druid. Druid, it doesn't have a lot of... Or actually, we should talk about druid synergy because it's slightly different than everybody else's.
Yeah, druids, if you have 2 druids, then 2 level 1 druids can become a level 2 druid. Tier or not 2. Level 2. Tier 2, yeah. 2 star. You can combine 2 to make 1. But then when you have 4 differently named druids, you can combine 2 level 2 or 2 tier 2s to make a tier 3.
Right.
Of a druid.
Rather than using 3 of a kind, druids use 2 of a kind as long as you have 2 or 4 druids of different types.
Yeah.
So Lone Druid is a druid, and he combines together as long as you have 1 other druid with just 2 of himself.
Right, and that's part of why he's
very
really
easy
good.
To reach tier 2.
Yeah,
the other part of why he's very good is his bear is very strong that he summons.
But, with Lone Druid, you can buy 1 of him, and then... Enchantress, the level 1 druid, and then you can just sell Enchantress back after combining.
So these two units, Lycan and Lone Druid, they have good stats, they have good synergies, and they summon creatures that are very powerful, and summoning is very good because that's essentially like you had extra units to start the fight. You have to spend a lot of gold to do something like that normally, so just having these free units is very useful.
We didn't even mention how the game ends.
I did in my short description.
Well, that when a round of combat's over, any remaining living units will deal 2 damage each to the opponent.
Right.
Specifically, it's the people fighting you, because you're not always put against the same player as who they're facing. So, it's more like somebody at random is attacking you, and they'll do damage to you. Okay. But if you beat them in that fight, you won't deal damage to them.
Right. So there's a lot of things we're talking about here, but what you're saying is that in the rounds of combat, it's not like you're paired off one to one, and then that's like the battlefield. It's more like every army is pitted against another army, people will fight different armies you'll fight a different army than the army you're fighting is fighting on another board. So really when it comes down to those combats, you're really only focusing on what's happening on your board. You don't really need to care about where your units were sent to fight somebody else's army. That doesn't affect you personally. Just the outcome that happens on your board.
Yeah.
Your and units.
So what I was getting at is I believe summoned units deal damage in a smaller amount to when you lose to them.
They deal 1 damage each.
Yeah. So that's another slight reason why they're good.
Now, this is called the punishment strategy. I've heard it referred to is building an army that summons a lot of units because they will deal more damage to your opponent if you win.
Yeah.
You have to have very powerful units in order to do this already. This is sort of a win more strategy in this game. In other games, a win more strategy is like you're already winning, now you're winning more, it's probably not worth it. In this game, it actually kind of is worth it just because there's a lot of opportunities for people to come back. So the faster you can eliminate some people from the game, the better.
Right. It's more like you focused on all the other important stuff. Mm-hmm. Now you can, you know, invest into like the remaining thing.
Sure. So so the ults that you should be focusing on towards the end of the game are these two summoning units. There's a couple other summoning units, but they're just not as strong. But Lycan and Lone Druid are very good. And then you're looking for AoE units like Razor and Shadow Fiend. And you're looking for crowd control units
like Kunkka and Medusa.
Yes, which can both stun a large group of people. And eventually, in the level 5 units, which are very rare to get, not until you reach level 10. I think you can get them as early as level 7 when your character is level 7.
But it's a 1% chance
that they get very rare.
Yeah.
But once you are starting to get level 5 units, Tidehunter is a great AoE stun. And then the Enigma, other units have good AoE damage.
All of them have good, yeah. But also, I wanted to mention one level 4 unit in particular, Disruptor. He does AoE damage, but enemy units in the AoE field can't use their abilities.
Right.
So he's sort of a mixture of both, but he shuts down things like enemy Kunkkas or Medusas.
Right. Disruptor is a very powerful unit at the... I think he's way better at the end game than he is at the mid game. Because his AoE crowd control, it's called a silence in this game. When you are unable to use your own abilities. It's only good if you can kill the units affected by his ability before it runs out.
Yeah.
And in the mid game, your units don't quite have enough damage to pile on and kill priority targets while that ability is happening. So I think it's good to... Disruptor is very strong near the end of the game when you have that ability to burst units down during his ultimate.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the units that you should be focusing on. There's one more aspect about this game that's very important, and that is how you arrange your units. Because you have this whole chessboard, this 4x8 grid, to arrange your pieces, but you're only going to have 10 pieces at most on the board to arrange before a round of combat. So you need to figure out how to arrange those pieces in order to get the most value out of them. And there are a couple short... Okay.
Oh, no, I was just saying right as in...
Oh, I thought you said wait.
No.
Yeah. There's a couple of short form, easy... rule of thumb strategies that you can arrange your pieces in order to take advantage of the mechanics of the game and the way that your pieces work. So now this is using information that I gained from watching a video of Amaz, who's a Hearthstone streamer. These are the terms that he used to describe the strategies. And those are lineup, box, and ult now. But I'm going to call it focus fire. But yeah, and ult now is fine. Lineup, mm-hmm. box, and ult now. And just to give a short description of what each of those do, with the lineup, this is usually a way that you arrange your units. If you just have mostly tanky melee units, so especially if you went with a warrior strategy, then you just line up all your units in a row on the nearest line of the board, because each of your units individually is very tanky, so they're not going to die if they get focused down. And each of your units individually does very high melee damage. So the purpose of this lineup is to get all of your units' ults to happen relatively quickly, and then to have each one of them just kind of square off 1v1 against your opponent's pieces. Because 1v1, a strong, tanky melee unit is going to defeat any other unit. So you have them all square off one by one, and then whenever a unit wins, it's 1v1, then it hops over and helps the person next to it, and this just kind of cascades into your whole team collapsing and running over your team.
Yeah.
So lineup is what you use, especially if you're going with a warrior strategy. It's where you put all your units lined up in a row. With a box strategy, this is where you have a squishy but powerful unit, kind of like Luna, who is a knight with a ranged attack, Shadow Fiend, who has the ranged AoE and is very strong but very squishy, Razor, It's where you put your squishy AoE ranged units in the center of a group and then box them around with your tankier units.
Right.
You can do this at the front of a board or sort of at the front line with your weaker units on the second line and all of your units kind of wrapping around them. This is good if the unit in the center has a shorter range than usual and has very strong AoE. Or you can put this all the way up, butted against your corner, your back corner, so that your opponents, like assassins, can't jump behind them or anything. And this is good if your units have a little bit longer range, like if you have a Wind Ranger, which has a very long attack distance.
Yeah.
It's also good for units that will fire diagonally across the board, like Wind Ranger, whose ultimate is to shoot a single shot in a straight line all the way across the board and damaging greatly any unit it passes over. So it's better to put that in the corner so it has, it can hit more squares.
Right.
The final arrangement is ult now, which is where you isolate one or two units in the center of the board and then put the rest of your units nearby, but off to the side. Because like we mentioned earlier, a unit gains mana based on how much damage it's dealing and how much damage it's taking. So if your strategy is to have one of your units use its ultimate ability very quickly, like because it has an area of effect stun or an area of effect damage that's does a lot of damage, and then you intend to quickly clean up the fight after that ability goes off, then the fastest way to have that ability go off is by putting them in the center and by drawing the focus of multiple units because they take more damage, so their mana generates faster, so they'll use their ability quicker.
Yeah.
And in general, the good units to do that with are Medusa, who has an AoE stun, Tidehunter, who has an AoE stun, and Disruptor, if you want to get that AoE silence off.
Yeah.
So that's about it for arrangement, as far as I have it, and in team comps. Do you have anything else in that regard?
Nope.
Let's see. There's one thing I wanted to say about so we mentioned how there's a pretty large pool that you're drawing from. So even if other players are using the same strategy as you, they don't affect you a lot. But there's a couple of ways that you can kind of think about that, because first of all, if there's a lot of randomness in this game, like there is, then any chance you get to mitigate that randomness, you should take. So just planning to pick up units that are not being picked up so much by your opponents is still going to give you a slight edge over them, even though it is only slight. But technically, if an opponent has a unit, you can kind of think of it as not like they have just that one unit, but that they'll eventually have 6 to 9 of that unit.
Right.
So, I mean, even if there's 45 of any given unit, one person buying one unit kind of represents that they intend to eventually buy 8 more of that unit. So you have less of a chance to draw that even beyond there.
Yeah.
As the game progresses.
And we should mention that all 8 player boards are always rendered invisible at the same time. So you can just kind of scroll your camera around and look at what everybody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know who you're going to be paired up against until the fight actually happens. So you can't like plan around that as much. But you can at least sort of spy what people are picking on their benches.
Yes.
And what sort of positions generally people are going for.
Yeah, you can play for a cup, plan for a few eventualities. You can get the gist of what everyone's doing and just kind of play off of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can see everyone's board. So you can see what they're building. You can see their reserves as well. So you can see what they're intending to build later or what they have saved up.
You can see what level they are, what items they have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
How much gold they have. Okay, so let's talk about how it was designed.
All right, yes.
Where do we start?
So first I want to mention that I want to talk about how it represents the drafting genre.
Okay.
So like at its core, auto chess is a drafting game. I mean, we talk a lot about how like, you know, there is like drafting from a shared pool and competing over those resources and all that, and mm-hmm. how the synergies in like races and stuff like that are all sort of built in archetypes, which are a staple to drafting games almost. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting how it does like these very typical board game, card game, drafting game concepts, but in a non tabletop, non card focused form, if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, this is just sort of typical drafting design 101, like having built in archetypes that are good, like keystones or touchstones to build around. It's mm-hmm. sort of like an easy way to cater to the Johnny / Jenny archetype of players. But I mean, also there's still the idea of like, you know, people can discover synergies that are incidental, you know, abilities that combo well together.
Yeah, every species and every class is distributed. I mean, every unit has a slightly different combination of species and class. So by just building one species synergies, you start to just kind of dip your toe into a lot of other different species and classes, other than goblins, which are pretty much just only mechs.
Yeah.
Everything else, you start to build it, and then you'll see like, oh, I'm actually not far from unlocking this synergy as well, just because I started working on knights. Knight has an elf, and it has an orc. I mean, a troll, and it has an undead. So you can get close to getting those synergies from there.
It
just kind of emerge as you go.
It sort of like acts as like an on-ramp into multiple strategies, like in that it eases you into the game by letting you easily get one synergy. And then since those tend to branch out from there, it's just mm-hmm. like it makes it less hard to get into. Like mm-hmm. you don't have to plan from turn one about playing for multiple synergies.
Right. It just kind of plays out that way.
Yeah. Which
it does help. Also, it distributes like at level one and even level two, you pretty much won't get any warlocks.
Oh yeah.
And you'll only get a handful of mages, and you won't get, you'll get one undead. You'll get one dragon.
You won't get any knights.
And you won't, well, in level two, you get
Level one.
I was talking level one and two.
Okay.
You'll get some elves, but it's mostly orcs, warriors, and goblins in the first two levels. And for good reason. I mean, they're good, but yeah, it also just kind of distributes all these different synergies along the spectrum, where you probably won't even consider getting mage synergies or human synergies until you're starting getting into the level three and level four units. So it also does that too, to kind of mitigate your decisions you have to make in the early game, make it a little easier for you to find your path and build into it. And then it opens up later after you've already become accustomed to your strategy that you're going for in a given run.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that this game has many catch-up mechanics. I think more than a lot of other games that I've played lately, auto chess, a lot of competitive games, auto chess has a great deal going towards it when it comes to catching up with the player in first. Or players in first.
Yeah,
if you have a poor early game, then you have not lost. Like, I've had very, very poor early games that I've been able to turn around into a top three finish, just because that's kind of how the game is designed.
Right. Well, I think at the core, it's based around two catch-up mechanics that plays into everything else, that being the losing streak gold and the interest.
I'd add to that two more mechanics, and that's the fact that it's very easy to get a tier two unit, and it's very difficult to get a tier three unit.
Yeah.
That certain early game strategies that will put you in the lead early game will fall off, and players who don't buy into those and spend any time or effort to continue those early game strategies find it very easy to build later game species synergies.
Yeah, I would almost put it like it's almost like they intentionally paced out these like power spikes and power dips. Uh-huh. So like at certain points in the game, people should generally be on similar levels. Like, right. obviously turn one, but then, you know, turn 10, the early game strategy starts to fall off and people can start getting decent tier twos of like level two and level three units.
I mean, it's pretty easy to get a tier two of any given unit from like levels one to three.
Because there's so many in the pool.
Because there's so many in the pool and you get them pretty often. I mean, it's like there's kind of this big gap between having a tier two unit and a tier three unit where there's a point in the mid game where like the person in first, all of his units are tier two, and the person in last has only like one tier two unit. But towards the end of the mid game, going into the end game, that person in last has like completed all of their tier two units as well. And if the person in first hasn't been able to really acquire any meaningful end game pieces or make any of his tier two units tier three, because that's a pretty difficult thing to do, then they'll be on a similar level at the end of the mid game.
Yeah.
Like just everything kind of lines up when it comes to how you acquire units in this game.
Yeah, there's like a roadblock or a road bump that hinders everybody, but in a way that sort of lets everybody catch up to the same spot before you cross that threshold.
As long as you're not doing terrible, and units don't deal all that much damage to you. Like, you have to lose a lot of rounds in a row, or you have to lose a number of rounds by a very large margin in order to get knocked out of the game, like at the beginning of the mid game.
Right, and you don't really lose that much by losing a round, right?
Right. I mean, it's only the remaining units that will deal damage to you. So if your army is competitive and it can still take out a few of the opponent's units in every combat, even if you're losing, you're not taking that much damage.
Yeah.
And then again, we'll get back to the points you mentioned. If you keep losing, then you receive the same gold bonus as the person who keeps winning.
Yeah, which is easier to keep losing than it is to keep winning, I would say.
It is, because not only are you receiving the same gold bonus, but you are not pressured to spend your money in order to maintain a competitive edge. So that means you don't have to spend your money to level up. You don't have to spend your money to acquire more units, and you don't have to spend your money to level up so that you can acquire stronger units more easily.
Yeah.
Instead, you just get to save your money and reach those higher income brackets. Those multiples of 10 gold where you start to acquire that interest. If you're losing, it's easier to get that that interest cap, which means eventually you will outpace the person in first with your gold acquisition.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, if you really dedicate yourself to a strategy where you intend to completely lose and get that maximum losing streak bonus, then you will be significantly outpacing first place by round 15, which is the end of the early game.
Right.
So pretty quickly you can get into this favorable position.
Right. I also think the fact that you can sell back units for the same price does help a lot, especially because if you're learning the game, you might not know what units are good or bad. But at least if you buy a bad unit and it turns out it's bad, you can just sell it and it doesn't impact you too much. Like I said, right. like you don't lose any gold by buying and selling a unit.
Right. You do lose gold if you combine units, because three level one. Well, actually, by combining higher tier units, because I think when you combine units into a higher tier, it increases in level by two. So three tier one units become a level three unit. So it sells for 3 gold. You don't lose money there. You break even. But 3 tier 2 units become a tier 4 unit. So you're turning 6 gold worth of pieces into 4 gold worth of pieces. So you start to lose money after you start combining higher level pieces. The exception is Enchantress, which is a druid that costs 1 gold. When she combines with herself in a pair, because she's a druid and you'll have another druid to do so, then she combines into a tier 3 unit, so you're technically converting 2 gold worth of units into 3 gold worth of units. That's the only way you gain money from combining.
Right.
Everything else either breaks even or most of the time will lose you money. But yeah. But
and then technically the two level 2 druids can break even on a tier 2.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yes, they break even. If you're not combining, then you can just field some units, see how they work out, see how their ults work, see how they mesh with the rest of your units. And if you don't like it, yeah, you can just sell them at like practically no cost. The cost is just losing a round.
Right. It's rare that you find a game that's as lenient as this with letting you feel out and like ease into just seeing what's good and bad. Like right. There's so many competitive games where making a bad decision can literally cost you the game. So right. This is really refreshing in that regard.
In some regards, it can be a little frustrating just because the game lasts so long and it keeps you around so long that if you are just straight up losing, you kind of will be there for a while until you are eventually kicked out. But because this game has so many catch-up mechanics to it or opportunities to catch up, then it's not terrible. You can catch up more often than not, at least, and finish at a decent standing.
Right. I want to talk about my personal, like, I don't know what to call this. It's like the opposite of a pet peeve. You know, it ticks all my boxes, which is hero-based character and game design.
Okay.
Or character-based game design. I'm going to call it like that. So This is just something I love in games, and I think auto chess. So
it's your pet.
Right, it's my pet.
It's not your pet peeve, it's your pet.
Right. So auto chess, it's based off Dota. It uses the same assets and all that. And since Dota is a hero-based game, auto chess uses the same heroes. And it still preserves the hero's identity through the mechanics, even though the mechanics are so different. And like there's fewer individual elements of a given character in
auto chess. That distinguish it.
Yeah.
Right.
So like... For example, Bounty Hunter is in regular Dota, from what I understand, because I didn't play it a whole lot. Bounty Hunter is a sort of character that's meant to roam around and flank people off guard and get a lot of gold for doing so. And in auto chess, he is good at jumping to the back lines early on and skirmishing 1v1 with the other weak, low health characters early game. And doing so lets you get the win bonus easier.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Morphling is really hard to pin down in Dota 2 because he has really good options to move around. And so his ult in auto chess moves him to the opposite side of a battle. So, I mean, like, I think it's really cool just from like a Vorthos flavor standpoint when a game is able to do something like that ties mechanics and stuff to the identity of the things in the game. And I mean, obviously, since this is a mod, it kind of cheats and is able to play off of a lot of what Dota already has, but still, I mean, it's just cool. It's well done.
Yeah, I personally adaptation. Like this kind of hero stylization in board game characters just because they're very easy to make connections with.
Yeah,
and to generate like your own sort of stories and histories with,
right?
You know, your own your own experience with the game.
Yeah,
or it's easier to put like a face to it, and so like when I played around one of my first rounds of auto chess, and I got the Juggernaut character, which spins around and deals a lot of damage, and is in general a very good orc warrior. And then I was able to get him to tier 3, and I put all these items onto him, and he basically just carried me through the game. Now I just kind of have a special spot for Juggernauts in any subsequent runs.
Yeah.
And the character itself has a meaning for me.
Right.
And a memory associated with it. And that's just because it was a hero, and I'm able to just, like, recall it. It's not just, like, a faceless piece.
Right. And from, like, a game design perspective, having a character whose concept and idea and identity is tied to their mechanics, and especially their strategic play, can help make it easier for a player to learn the sort of ideal play style for a thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I guess going back to Morphling, since he is really good at moving around, and he's like water, you know, he surges, he flows. Putting him in a position that lets him move around a lot can be pretty effective.
Right.
Or, yeah, Timbersaw likes to cut down a lot of trees. He literally hates trees. That's his backstory. But putting him in the middle of a bunch of people, quote-unquote trees, lets him, you know, be good. Or he's a buzzsaw. He looks like he would fit in the middle of a bunch of enemies.
Right.
Yeah. It's like this intuitive connecting like lateral thinking between a theme and a mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very prevalent in hero based games.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
I think that's about all I have to say about auto chess.
I have a few more things.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, that a lot of popular competitive games, at least, they sort of like to have a lot of pillars of strategic elements or like pillars of strategy. So like auto chess has like a few main pillars. There's like economy and, you know, how you spend and gain gold. There's positioning. There's team composition, you know, like three or four main things.
Yeah.
And a lot of competitive games, it seems like, try to design themselves around this way, partially because it gives players elements to improve. So like a Spike, for example, likes to outplay and learn how to outplay the opponents. Mm-hmm. But also in a competitive environment, it keeps things from getting too stale. So, like, if you have a player who's really good at the late game and a player who's really good early game, that's going to look a lot different from a match between a player who's really good early game and another player who's really good early game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a bit more of, like, player self-expression in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the player who's good at late game might not even participate in the early game. They might go for that just total losing strategy so they can reach end game quicker.
Right, which... Again, like from a spectator standpoint, it's really good. But even from just a player standpoint, it makes the matches that you're involved in different every time.
Right.
And I think that's a really important thing for a game that's meant to be played a lot and a lot and a lot over and over, like a competitive game. You don't want your players to get bored of the game in the middle of a tournament.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. And I think the pillars in this game, I guess, like we mentioned how the synergies come pretty naturally, but also like positioning kind of makes sense at just like the basic level. Like you'd want your tanky big guys in front and your range squishy characters surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a fairly intuitive idea already. So you're not really forced to learn something before you play. Like in fighting games, like if you want to play online, you might at least want to learn like shield pressure or neutral game, stuff like that. But in this game, you don't really have to learn that because it comes pretty basically.
Sure.
The creeps are nice in that they're intermissions that let you take a bit more time to just think. And... you know, like, kind of give you a breather every now and then. They're mm-hmm. not paced too far out that it's too jarring, though. But my one problem is the item RNG is really, really hard to deal with sometimes.
Yeah.
As in, like, it's one of those things where when everybody is getting, like, the average sort of luck like you would expect, it doesn't feel like anything's happening or, like, anything's different. But when it's bad, then it feels really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that low sticks out more than the more common average. And this is something I personally dislike when a RNG-based mechanic has really bad lows, but the averages and most of the highs are pretty unremarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, the emotional feeling of a mechanic can sometimes outweigh the actual mathematical outcome in terms of how a player perceives it, you know.
Right. Yeah. I did remember one more thing about the design that actually is a little unfortunate, and that is how people are actually paired off against one another set against one another in the game. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So the way that it pits people against each other is it will generate a number, a random number, and then it'll essentially say you fight the next opponent around the board in that many spaces.
Oh, weird.
So everyone's arranged around in a circle. So if the number generator generated one, that means you fight the pieces to your opponent on your left. they fight the pieces of the opponent on their left, and so on.
Okay.
So what this means is that if you are in first place and the person opposite you is, or and the person in second place is not opposite you, then your units will never face against one another. Unless a certain thing happens, unless like people get eliminated.
Yeah.
So this is a bad thing, because it means that the person who's in first is never challenged, and they maintain a win streak much longer. And if there's a person in first and a person in second, then at least one of them will have a very good win streak, and the other one will not. Because again, if someone is on the opposite side of the board as you, then you will fight their pieces and they will fight your pieces in the same round of combat.
Right. Specifically, you mean there is no chance for the player in first and second to be against each other in the same round, so yeah, that only one of them wins.
Exactly. Unless they are opposite each other on the board, then there's no chance that they will fight each other's pieces in a single round, which means that they will never both have a chance of losing their win streak in the same round.
Weird. Yeah, that's interesting.
So unfortunately, that can lead to some games in which the person in first just stays in first and just maintains their lead, because they're or the person in first and second just stay in first and second and have a very low chance of losing their lead. It essentially means that you have a lower chance, or people have a lower chance of playing against their rival in the game.
That's a good way to put it. Also means
the person in last has less of a chance to fight the other person in last, and vice versa, which means that on average most of their fights are going to be difficult. And same with the other person in last. Most of their fights are going to be difficult.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. So this kind of has some pretty big implications in the long run. It doesn't come up often, and enough of the catch-up mechanics are unrelated to match results that it doesn't make a big impact, but it does make an impact. So if I had a wish list of what could change about auto chess, it would just be to change that to where anybody can fight anybody.
Yeah.
In any given round.
Oh, I was going to say, going back to items really quick, a lot of the high, combination items, like the tier 2 items, they're really cool and they have cool abilities, but even in a game where you win and you survive everybody else, you're probably not going to get more than one, maybe two, which just, it feels like wasted potential.
Yeah, it's like, why put them in the game? There's some items that upgrade twice, they combine with another item to upgrade into one, and then that thing can combine with another thing to upgrade into another item. I don't know if that ever happens.
I've done it once, but it was when the ingredient to combine it again was common.
Gotcha.
And the item ingredients that are super rare, you're never gonna get the items they build into.
Yeah, it's weird that's in the game when it hardly ever happens. That would be my second wish list in the game, is to make item drops, more consistent and more interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. There is one more thing I was going to mention. Oh yeah. One thing I do like is that because all of the fighting happens after you lock in your thing, there's no inputs you do during a fight necessarily, except maybe to give an item to somebody you forgot to give it to. This means that, for one thing, you're allowed to take a breather every few seconds to think about what you're going to do next. But it means that you're not necessarily paced around an opponent. This is just something weird that, I feel like some online sort of turn-based games have, is that the time an opponent takes their turns can sort of throw you off mentally.
Uh-huh.
But by having a set timer for when to lock in, and then also just having all the decision-making happen regardless of the time your opponent takes, basically, I think it helps with sort of, this staying focus aspect.
Yeah.
Like, people can't run out the clock like they can in a card game, you know?
Right. Everyone is operating on the same schedule, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, but overall, I found that to be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Is that all that you have to say about auto chess?
I think that's about it, yeah.
All right, then that is our episode on Dota 2 Auto Chess.
Yes.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you want to, if you can follow us on social media at Board Game Bros, at BG Bros Cast, sorry.
There we go.
Here we go. At BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and to interface with us, chat with us. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all of our episodes. You can listen to the BGB video game episode we did last month on Mario Party.
Super Mario Party, specifically.
There, as well as all of our other episodes for you to check out. They're all categorized and tagged. Especially the video game ones, I think, are tagged as video games. So you can find those by searching through our tags there. And
yep.
You can find other games that we've talked about, board games specifically.
Right. You can like us and rate us on any podcasting app you use.
Yep, we would appreciate any and all feedback you have for us, especially if you like these video game episodes, because this is now the second one, and maybe we'll do more because we like video games almost as much as we like board games.
Yeah.
And you can also find our TeePublic link to our TeePublic account on our website, or you can just go directly there. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. That's where we sell our merch. You can get a cool t-shirt with our cool, cool logo on it. Rep the podcast wherever you go.
And, let us know if you would want to buy any other clothing or apparel with our logo on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, we could do more clothing and apparel. I've also been thinking of new designs. I think we should probably put out a couple more new designs.
Oh, yeah.
That you could pick up to rep our podcast. But anyways, that's it for Board Game Bros plugs. Let's go into Matt plugs.
Yeah, I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I usually stream from weekdays from about like 11 a.m. Central Time to 2 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of competitive games. I play a lot of roguelites and roguelite adjacent games and some platformers and RPGs here and there.
Will you be playing auto chess anytime soon?
Probably, yeah. But I know next week I'm going to start playing a platformer called Momodora Reverie Under Moonlight. I've heard it's pretty good.
Okay.
But then also on the Board Game Bros website, you can find my articles and blog posts. I have two up right now about video game design, the most recent of which is about the video game design in the modern Hitman games. I had a cold all last week, so I couldn't finish my one I was going to release last week. But you can bet that I have one in the pipeline. And also on my Twitch page, you can find a link to a Discord server where you can interact with us. I'm on there all the time, basically. And you can get updates on when I stream as well. And if you follow the stream, you might hear updates on the podcast as well. It's sort of like a symbiotic, relationship there.
All right.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Yep. That's it for Matt Plugs. That's it for Board Game Bros. Thank you very much for listening. And we will see you next week with another regularly scheduled episode.
Yeah.